again, my gorgeous listeners, and thank you for tuning in to another live episode of the Glow West podcast, where we chat about sex, sexuality, and the body. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline West, and as always, I'm delighted to be a part of the Torta Check Network, where you can find tons of content on politics, culture, society, and me with my sex podcast. If you like what we do, please do consider supporting us at patreon.com/tortashack, as it really does help to keep the mics on. Or please pop over to Apple and rate and review. Joining me tonight on this live podcast is a future sex therapist who is here to chat to us all about sexual liberation and shame-free sex. Tatiana K. King is a virtual sexual wellness coach for Blex Technologies, a graduate student at Widener University studying sex therapy, and a sex blogger for various digital platforms such as Swoon and Taboo. She's also a volunteer and educational presenter at the Centre for Positive Sexuality, which is a non-profit organisation dedicated to research and education of human sexuality through a social justice lens. Her interests are really kind of pretty varied, I suppose we could say, but they centre around female pleasure, kink, and alternative sexualities. Tati, thank you so much for joining me tonight. How are you keeping all the way over in the States?
Oh, it is quite the experience being over here with the pandemic going on and the election coming up soon. So I've been doing a lot to just maintain my sanity and my mental health amid grad school as well. So thank you for asking. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am all good. I'm slightly hoarse after spending a few hours talking about porn literacy today, but look, we'll get there. They're talking about fun topics. So, you know, we've no election chat today. We've no drama. We're talking about the fun side of sex and sexual liberation.
Yes.
So yay. Talk to me about how you define what that is, because I suppose people might have a few different views of what it is, or maybe just don't know, or maybe hadn't heard of it before. So how would you define sexual liberation?
To me, sexual liberation is navigating your sexuality in a way that is true to yourself and utilizing sexual autonomy. So taking ownership of your body and living in a way sexually that fulfills you. So let's say even if you're not having sex or you are in a relationship or you're single, regardless of whatever walk or stage you are in your life, you're taking ownership of your body. You're in a space where you're allowing yourself to receive pleasure, or you're in a space where you're allowing to say, well, sex for me right now isn't what I want to do, but that's okay because I'm allowing myself to make that choice.
Which all sounds lovely. That sounds like the good kind of sex. Just before we go on, I should have said that at the start, just a reminder to any participants joining us in the live that you can ask questions in the chat box and we'll have the opportunity to go through them at the end. So Tati, you mentioned there like that idea of autonomy when it comes to sexual pleasure and sex, and obviously that sounds great and that's what we should be aiming for, but how do you actually achieve that in real life?
Ooh, that's a very good question. In real life, it just means that you're confident in who you are as a sexual being, and it's okay to allow yourself to go there. Like, for example, some people, especially within the pandemic, it's a little bit harder for them to harvest personal and human connection during this time. So a way to navigate your sexual autonomy is to use sex toys and allow yourself to explore with that and get to know your body, get to know the pleasure, get to know the different parts of your body that respond to different stimulations and different strokes and motions. So a lot of sexual autonomy just means being one with your body and allowing yourself to get to that point of fulfillment.
Which sounds such a good idea. Like if you know your body and you know what kind of touch you like, then you can tell other people what kind of touch you like, and so everyone's not scrambling around in the dark or literally fumbling in the dark and trying to figure out what things like that is. But I think things like masturbation, and I know in Ireland for sure, and definitely in parts of America, can be really shrouded in stigma or shame, particularly For people who have vulvas, you know, it seems to be more okay if you have a penis, you can masturbate all you want. But for people historically with vulvas, there was a lot of shame, and it was like, oh, good girls don't do that, or that's dirty, or, you know, like all these kind of negative connotations. So do you have any advice for people who might still have that hangover? Because I think that's pretty common for a lot of people to feel uncomfortable for those reasons when it comes to masturbation. So how do you smash that shame and stigma for yourself as a person and get to enjoy masturbation?
I think it comes with having the right resources and the best support group, because with me growing up, especially with masturbation, it wasn't something people talked about when it came to vulvas and vaginas. When it comes to the penis, it's like, we can just make an easy joke about it and it's haha funny, you know, jacking off, great. But when it comes to the vulva in general, there's something a bit more threatening about it to the grand society, something about vulvas that we're just instilled with at a young age. We hear that it's dirty or weird or just not something that we need to focus on. So I think part of getting more comfortable with it is speaking about it openly to the right people. And that's something that helped me a lot personally, because like I said, when I was younger, I just didn't hear about it much and people would say the wrong things to me. But then as I got older and I trusted people I was close to talk about it, then it was more of a normal thing, finding out that a lot of other of my friends masturbated in the same way. Like they would masturbate on their stomach, whereas sometimes in depictions of mainstream TV or even porn, you see people inserting fingers inside themselves and it's like, oh, well, that's not necessarily how I do it. And that's not how you do it either. So creating those open and honest conversations really helps people. And it's helped myself too.
I think that's such a common thing. Like if you look at masturbation being depicted in porn, it's quite hardcore, I suppose. And, you know, you're inserting all sorts of weird and wonderful things inside yourself. And for a lot of people, they're like, I'm just happy with clitoral stimulation or whatever it happens to be. And there's obviously certain toys that will just do that kind of stimulation. But I suppose if we went even back before modern days of porn, I suppose like, and I might be before your time, I'm showing my age here, but Sex and the City was, you know, one of the first cultural depictions of masturbation that I had seen. And they were all about the rampant rabbit vibrator, which in real life, I was like, this just awkward, like it's just hard to use, it's noisy, it's just not doing anything for me and such. But did you have that same kind of awakening, and like, again, you're not a baby, but you know, that's before your time as such, but did you have any moments of like, ah, that's what masturbation is, through watching the media, that were a more positive approach to masturbation?
Well, first of all, I actually love Sex and the City, but yeah, it is a tad bit before my time, but I do adore that show. But the first time I saw a more accurate representation in the media was watching Sex Education on Netflix. And there was a scene in which the character, I want to say her name is Amy. I can't remember if that's the actress's name or the character's name, but one of the characters, she's kind of confused because she's sleeping with her boyfriend and he says, you know what, I feel like you're faking it. I feel like you're just doing things because that's what you think I want. I want you to tell me what you want me to do to you. And then she thinks about it for a second and she's like, oh, well, I don't even know. So then she goes to Otis, the not the sex therapist of the show necessarily, but the person who's managing people's sex advice, and he suggests that she masturbates. So then I don't remember if she gets a vibrator or what, but one thing that did stick out to me is she was masturbating in different positions, different angles, and all of it seemed to be great because she was exploring different methods to please herself. Whereas in other representations, it's almost centered toward the male gaze.
Yeah, that kind of literal open leg to camera kind of thing, which for obvious reasons is there in porn. You know, it's probably not as exciting to just focus on, you know, someone on their stomach, or because you're not seeing all the genitals and stuff. But yeah, it's great to have those kind of different options, I suppose, around. But, you know, you, like we said, like Sex and the City was kind of one of my sex education things and stuff. But you grew up in the South in America. So that's a very, I actually think it would probably be quite similar to Ireland in a lot of ways, like that kind of very conservative attitude and sex wasn't really spoken about a whole lot. So what was that like for you on that personal level? And because you've now obviously overcome a lot of that conservative nature and, you know, you're talking on a podcast about being sexually liberated. So how did that journey go?
I'm not even going to lie to you. It was hard because growing up, I feel like I've always been a pretty sexually aware person. Like normally when you see kids, they're playing around with action figures or dolls and they just have very childish interests, which is understandable because if you're a child, you're going to be interested in childish things. But I was interested in the human body and different body parts, and I was always drawing naked people. And I would go around the playground and ask my classmates, what do they think a vagina looks like? And where do they think babies come from? And if their parents had that discussion with them yet. So I think that that natural curiosity and that interest was threatening to some people.
Yeah. And that would, maybe that might get your parents called in to see the school principal or something.
Kind of, actually. There were some teachers and some parents of the students who did contact my family and they said, hey, this is what your daughter's doing. Maybe you should encourage her to chill out a little bit. So it was pretty hard growing up in the South because we're so heavily influenced by religion. And this isn't me talking down on religion at all because I myself am a Christian. But when you have those two different concepts, sometimes people take that and they can twist it in different ways they want. So yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, and a lot of overcoming and maybe internalizing of that shame or the correct form that you can have sex in and all those kind of things. So, well then how did you get to studying sex therapy then at the moment? Like, well, did you have an aha moment or was it just that gradual process of unlearning everything?
Both in a way, because the more I grew up, the more I was both comfortable and ashamed of having this interest. Because for example, one day in my advisory group, and advisory is like a designated group you go to in high school where you can ask the teacher specific questions and you have this group of students who are basically your group throughout high school. And sometimes during that block of the schedule, I would bring in my sex books and I would secretly be teaching other people about sex and reading part of the chapters. The book was called The Guide to Getting It On. I forgot what the author's name is, but for anyone who wants to do further reading, that is a great book. But yeah, I would be reading that to students and they would be equally interested, but we had to do it so secretly. And then one day I just decided I'm really tired of keeping this interest a secret. I'm tired of people pretty much living a secret or keeping things covert. And these things are just natural to people. Having human connection, developing crushes, relationships, sex, they're all very natural to so many people. So one day I was on YouTube and I was looking at a bunch of random BuzzFeed videos. And then I saw a suggested video on the side that says a day in the life of a sexologist. And I said, what in the world is a sexologist? So me being the person I am, I clicked on it immediately. And then it showed a video of someone named Dr. Jill McDevitt. She's a sexologist and she was basically showing her life, showing what she does and how she creates workshops and speaks to different colleges and has coaching sessions with people to help them navigate any sexual issues. So I thought that was really cool. And that was my aha moment. I'm like, that is what I want to do.
Yeah, that's like, that's what I want to be when I grow up, even though, yeah, like I still have those moments. And I'm like, I'll grow up at some point. We'll get there. But you, again, you know, we've talked a lot on the podcast about how, like, you know, race intersects with sexuality and gender as well. And we just recently had Robin Wilson-Beattie on the podcast, and she is a Black woman in Atlanta. And so she was talking a lot about how the fight to, I suppose, have access to decent medical care when she suffered a disability or an injury that led to a lifelong disability was impacted by her race and her gender as well. And she really kind of had to fight for, you know, being included in sex education and battle against ideals that, like, you know, there are lots of different stereotypes when it comes to, you know, sex and race and gender and all those things. So did you have that experience as well, being in that kind of southern part of America?
Yeah, I did actually. I noticed that when it came to the Black girls in the class, a lot of us, we started developing breasts earlier and our bodies were starting to fill out more. And with our white girls in the class, when it just came to sexuality and growing up and experiencing these new things, when it came to the Black girls, it was looked upon differently. It was almost as if we all went through the same things, but when it came to us, people thought it was a tad bit more raunchy inherently, which people aren't always aware of how those projections on us stem from past stereotypes that have stemmed from slavery and even a little bit after that. So yeah, there's definitely an intersection there, because people are always just going to look at certain people differently depending on what the topic is. And they're always going to think of us as a bit more sexually promiscuous than maybe our white friends.
Do you think porn plays its part in that? Because we know if you go into some of the free sites and the tube sites that you can search in the drop down menu for Black people using pretty horrific racist terms. And, you know, there's different stereotypes that are played up. And, you know, sometimes maybe Black men are only portrayed as, you know, intruders or robbers, or, you know, I think like even the word ghetto is used sometimes and stuff. So do you think that really perpetuates those stereotypes that you were talking about?
Oh, definitely. I can barely even watch Black porn because of the way they have their actors and actresses portrayed on there. A lot of it is like, when it comes to Black men, the title will say something along the lines of Mandingo, which is a stereotype of Black men having larger penises by nature. And then with the women, we're either 10 times more promiscuous and we just know what to do, we know how to do this and that, or they show us in more of a submissive light with white men, and it kind of plays on race play. And that's also something I guess it depends on who you ask, but me personally, I don't like a lot of the depictions that they have with Black adult performers.
I think that goes across as well. Obviously, racism is such a huge part of it, but it goes across a lot of porn, like that people don't like the way porn represents sex and it doesn't feel very liberating. And it can, I suppose it maybe might lead to people adopting a more performative role when it comes to sex. So we're either faking it, or we're acting really loud, or we're thinking, okay, if I have 10 positions in one night, that's what sex is, because that's what you see in porn. And you're not seeing people stay in a missionary, you know, for 5 minutes and then sex is over, or whatever real life sex happens to look like. So how do we move away from that kind of performative nature and move back into more authentic sexuality? Because there's a lot of unlearning, you know, from porn, from mainstream society, from various media depictions of sex and religion and all the rest of it. How do we reclaim that authentic sexuality for ourselves?
It starts with making sure that everyone's comfortable in their environment, because I'm all about having random conversations about sexuality, even outside of the bedroom. Like, I will gather up my friends during a sleepover and we'll just ask each other a bunch of questions And it just helps when people know that they're in a safe space to do so. Because I noticed when it comes to people, they're a lot more willing to talk about sex when there's a certain level of anonymity. And it helps if maybe you're at a party setting, or maybe you're at a bar, or even just a random coffee date with someone, and you could even bring up celebrities, if there's something that happens with a celebrity or a reality show and you see how they did things. Like, for example, a past episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians had Khloe Kardashian and Lamar Odom. They bought a sex swing, and I thought that was really interesting. So I would bring that up with my friends. I would say, hey, like, what do you think about this? That's kind of interesting. I've never heard of a sex swing. Would you use it? Have you used it? So it really starts in the authentic conversations that allow people to have a certain level of comfort and not pressure.
And I think, you know, I was speaking in the porn literacy class I did before this about how a lot of porn ends in orgasm, and generally just the male orgasm, and women are absolutely delighted with that and there's no problem whatsoever, which obviously is not reflective of real world sex. So how can we get past the whole either faking orgasm or struggling to achieve orgasm, or maybe not even knowing where to start, you know, to even make that happen for yourself?
Yeah, and that's pretty hard because there's just so much pressure to have sex in a more performative way. So when it comes to faking orgasms, I really do encourage people to say so when it's happening. If there's something that's going on that you're not enjoying, obviously don't be rude about it. But at that moment, let's say someone is giving you just a tad bit too much tongue, you can say, hey, I prefer if you go just a little bit softer, or a little bit to the left, a little bit more to the right. Or you could say, why don't we switch to something else? I love the way you fingered me earlier. Why don't we go back to that? Or I don't know, just some way to guide them to where it doesn't seem like you're definitely not enjoying it or that you're being rude, but just giving in those suggestions. And shoot, hopefully they listen, because some people don't. So you gotta also worry about that aspect. But I think if you're being as intentional as possible, then it's likely that things will work out for you.
I think that's a very important part of sex, to be able to say that honestly, because sometimes if you look at some of the guides or what's said about sex, and maybe some of the more older guides, it's very much paint by numbers sometimes. It's like, oh, spell out the alphabet with your tongue when you're doing oral sex. And for some people, that is amazing. For some, you're like, just put your tongue in the same feckin' place for 5 minutes. Stop moving it around all over the place. And the other person who's doing that is probably thinking, okay, I'm on letter L now. Like, you know, I'm halfway through the alphabet. Yeah. This is going to be great, because I'm doing exactly what I read in the magazine. So, you know, it's hard for a lot of people to find what we were actually meant to do in bed, apart from, you know, like when we're looking at all these guides and information and everything like that. So how can we, I suppose, protect our ego from that acceptance of, I haven't been giving authentic pleasure and it's not my fault, but this, you know, it's hard for a lot of people to find that authenticity.
Yeah, part of that means just realizing that there are truly different strokes for different folks.
Literally.
It's not necessarily, it's not necessarily a shot to your personal methods of pleasing someone. It's not anything against you, but some people receive stimulation in a way that you never thought. I mean, if we were to go off magazines, most of it, when it comes to vulvas, it is telling people to place a lot of direct stimulation in the clitoris. And while that may be ideal for some, for me personally, I actually don't need too much stimulation on the clitoris. I need just a little bit to open the clitoral hood, and then I'm ready to go with penetration. So if you were to go off of the magazines, you would have never known that about me. So it's great to just understand that just because you may think that something is the right method, even if it's the most popular method you've ever known, understand that it's not the same for everyone.
Yeah, and that goes for so many aspects of sex and different genders and different sexualities as well. Like we've all seen the guides of like get an ice cube, or this is how you have a blowjob, or this is how you do this, and they're not personalized. And this is what I love about talking to people like yourself, and we get that message out there a little bit more of ask the person and stop kind of applying that blanket approach to each person. Is that what kind of motivates you in, you know, in your work as like bringing that conversation about sexual liberation to the fore? I mean, you're busy, you're doing education, you're blogging, you're going to be a sex therapist in the future. How are you bringing in that, you know, authenticity? Again, I keep coming back to that word, but that's what it is, into all of your work there.
Well, one of the things that I used to do, and I don't do as much or at all really ever since the pandemic, and honestly, ever since I graduated undergrad, but I and my past roommates created these things called the Freak Squad lingerie parties. And it happened because my friends and I were having this authentic and random conversation about guys in the past who we dated. And then the three of us realized that we used to date the same guy at the same time. And I know society loves to pit women against each other and make us go into this competition. But once we found that out, we were just laughing and giggling. We're like, oh, you know, whatever. We'll just compare notes and see how it was like for you. And then afterwards we said, well, why don't we just invite a bunch of other women at the apartment and have this big celebration about sex and sexual woes and problems and anything we want to talk about, whether it's advice or just venting, let's invite them all over. So that's what we did. And we had these amazing lingerie parties where all the girls, we dressed up in our lingerie, had open and honest conversations about sex and played Never Have I Ever. And we had this game that's called Pin the Dick on the Dude. And we just had a good old time just talking about sex and dressing up and really letting loose and not really giving into that competition, but just having a fun time no matter what.
That sounds amazing. Please bring those back once we can get back into
I really want to.
Yeah. With that, you're reminding me of a past episode we did with Cora Harrington, the lingerie addict, and you know, and she was talking about like the power of lingerie and how, and you know, I was saying I only ever used to think of lingerie as, oh, you put that on for sex and, you know, or you're taking your selfies, whatever it happens to be. And I didn't really ever really look at it as in, this is a nice thing for me to do, which is, again, it's the product of patriarchy and society and all the rest of it and stuff. So I love hearing that you guys are just all hanging out in your underwear and just chilling and feeling good. And it's probably, if I'm imagining it right, it's probably going, you look amazing, you look great, that color is really good on you and all that thing. And
that's, oh yeah,
it's so lovely to hear that, that kind of affirmation amongst your friends when it comes to your body instead of reserving it just for your sexual partners.
And then sometimes we would even turn it into a mini date night. I mean, there were some guys who were looking at our Snapchat stories and they're like, hey, you know, what's going on over there? So then we would ask each other, like, you know, who do you have a crush on? Maybe we'll just invite this person over and set you up with them. And that's what happened. It went from, you know, a nice sexual liberation party, and it still was pretty much sexual liberation, even when we invited other people over, but it was nice to just really let loose and ask each other about our sexual lives and who did we want to hook up with and who did we hook up with in the past, and just really have no shame when it came to this. And there were definitely some people who didn't approve of it. They said that was odd. I don't want to get dressed in my lingerie and I don't want to be around other people doing this. And I don't fault them at all, because like I said before, it's just different depending on who you ask. And I don't shame anyone for not wanting to do that. However, shoot, it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. And I like the shame-free atmosphere of being so open with who you are and really living that.
And I'd say the people who were invited over could not believe their luck, because that's a great environment to be walking into. Yes, like
the perfect speed date.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so good. Well, and you're talking about like the joy of being in spaces like that. And hopefully we get back to that after, you know, pandemic times and we can hang out with other humans again. But I suppose on your journey, you know, through sex education and going to conferences and being a sex educator, it's really fun to be in those kind of spaces in a professional level. You know, and it's what sometimes the best fun is after the conference, and you're all sitting in the bar and you're going, well, this is what I think about this kind of sex, and you're having all these conversations and fluid, I suppose, just yeah, topics and meshing in together and all the rest. Have you been in a lot of those spaces? Because I know you're kind of starting your journey ish, but you've still, you're a busy bee still getting around, you know, to all those kind of events. So how have you experienced that kind of environment in your journey as a sex educator?
Yeah, with conferences, it was very interesting seeing people in a professional setting first and presenting their PowerPoints and their panels. And then afterwards, when things settle down and we're at the bar or a different activity, it's great to get to know people and understand their backgrounds. Like, for example, one of the after party events to one of the conferences I went to in February, it was at a sex dungeon in California. And that was actually my first time ever going to a sex dungeon. So it was cool getting that professional experience, but also understanding that we're humans at the end of the day and we like to have fun. So going to that sex dungeon and just seeing everyone enthralled in each other and get to know each other. And there was also really good food at that sex dungeon. I mean, I don't know what that's I was important. Really expecting, but I wasn't expecting as much food as I saw. So it was just great. Like looking in the corner and seeing someone get spanked with a paddle and then seeing someone doing fire play over there and then another person doing rope play, and then all of a sudden you look to the other corner and you see the kitchen with all the delightful food. And it was just a great environment to mix different worlds that people would think maybe wouldn't go together but actually do. So yeah, it is cool mixing the educational realm and potential sex therapy and academia, all of those different worlds together.
I think I've seen a few threads online where people have gone to events like that, and you know, they will, the highlight of it is the food for some people, or else they're bitching about the food and go, oh, it wasn't great food. And you're like, I suppose the banality of that aspect, whereas, you know, in the corner, someone's having a screaming orgasm or something and you're like, yeah, the cheese sticks aren't really great, you know, and that's where your yes, your focus is. And it's so surreal sometimes. Like, so yeah, I think it brings you to bizarre places sometimes, the sex education world, and you're only going to get there, you know, the more you graduate and stuff. So you're aiming to be a sex therapist, and mm-hmm. it's such an essential job for our culture and our society, and I almost wish it was free so that everybody could go to it all the time.
And I know, right? You know,
yeah, learn all their kind of stuff. Do you have like a particular demographics you're really hoping to work with, or do you anticipate certain themes that will come up over and over again? Or is it just, like everything, it's going to be obviously very individualized to most people?
It, to some degree, I see how it will be individualized, but right now, the demographic I notice that respond to my work the most are women between the ages of 18 to 35, around that age group. And usually the common theme I hear about is some form of sexual communication, whether they're someone who they're not orgasming with a partner, but they orgasm by themselves, or they're someone who they don't really know how to make the first move with another person and get that date. So all of it really is about using your words or using your actions to get the results that you want. So that's been the main theme that I've noticed.
That's huge for a lot of people. I think some people would prefer to have a not satisfying sex life rather than actually verbalize, hey, this is actually what I need and I'm not happy at the moment? Because that's terrifying for a lot of people to say that.
Oh, it is for sure. I mean, growing up, we're just not, and I can't speak for everyone, but with me personally, my sex education growing up was not the best. I didn't learn about much other than abstinence and purity. So I relied heavily on both my mom and my dad to teach me everything about the body. And they really didn't shy away from anything. So thank God I have the best parents in the world. But when it comes to school and the education system, we just don't really know about this stuff because, well, for many reasons, actually, and that could be a whole different conversation.
That's a longer kind of podcast. But do you think things like sex education, I know I've gotten quotes from you before about articles about gentle beauty products and how we have this need forced on us in society to like bleach your bits and, you know, and subject them to all sorts of weird, wonderful treatments. Do you think that that market for gentle beauty products would diminish if we were more comfortable with how our bodies looked and the diversity of body shapes that are there?
Oh, definitely. Because even with my blogging, some people will reach out to me and they'll say, I'm not really comfortable with the way my vagina looks or my vulva looks. And I have to reassure them that everything is fine down there. I know that when you look at the media, you look at commercials and beauty products, or even go down the aisle to your local drugstore, you'll see a lot of those products marketed toward younger women. And you see that and you internalize it thinking that there's something wrong with you. But I always assure people there is nothing wrong with your genitals. There's a huge variation. I mean, think about faces in general. Yes, faces come within like a circular look, but no face looks exactly the same. So think of that in the same way that you think of your genitals. It's just different. So it's really hard to give people suggestions on what to do to move forward with that, because it's something that when it's instilled in your mind, it's really hard to get rid of.
And even things like some of those products very subtly or sometimes not so subtly hint that they'll improve smell and stuff like that. And our vulvas and vaginas aren't meant to smell of roses or whatever the product is meant to be, you know, a fresh summer's breeze or whatever tagline that they're using and stuff.
A fresh car or something like that.
Like, I mean, that might appeal to some kind of fetishist or something like that. But for the majority of us, that's not what's going on. So, you know, how do we get comfortable with things like that of going, like, my vagina is going to have a natural smell. It's going to have discharge. And that discharge is going to change throughout the month, depending on our menstrual cycle, all those kind of things. Is it just like, I feel like that comes from like a kind of a radical sex education that really like addresses the shame and stigma, because I think that's where the roots come from.
Oh, definitely. When it comes to that, you really have to dive in and become one with your vulva, or really just anyone who, not even just vulvas, but penises as well, become one with what your body has. Because the more you shy away from looking at your vulva or touching your vulva or smelling your vulva, you're not really going to know what is normal. And I don't even think I looked at my vulva for the first time until I was, 17 or 18. And I was thinking, oh, wow, like, it's really cute. I didn't, because before, everyone basically put these messages out that vulvas were gross or weird looking. And then I look at mine and I'm like, wow, okay, this isn't scary. But yeah, I just encourage people to get up close and personal with their goods. I mean, it's okay to smell it. It's okay to touch it. It's your body anyway. And the same with other people. I mean, if you're dating someone, please get up close and personal with their genitals as well. I mean, you could draw it on a paper and give it to the person and help them admire their own body, or just take time to really worship it and appreciate it.
Do you think part of that is learning the different terminology? Because again, some of those products are, you know, like they're called like a vagina wax or bleach. And it's like your vagina is your internal part. Don't put wax inside your body. That's not a good thing. But, you know, and the fact that they're not often called the correct name. But a lot of us, you know, might not even know what the word vulva means or the different parts of the clitoris or how big the clitoris actually is. And I know no one can see it at home, but for the guests in the audience, that's basically what your clitoris looks like there. I have a little crocheted clitoris on my bookshelf because that's what sex nerds have. But, you know, do you think, how can people figure out the correct terminology? Because we grow up with, you know, those titles of, oh, it's your private parts or your front bum or whatever, you know, terminology that you have, or your cookie or whatever. How do we move past that and kind of take the shame out of just saying the word vagina or vulva or penis or scrotum or whatever it happens to be?
A big part of that relies on people's parents teaching them the correct terminology, because when they're young, they may hear certain words like hoo-ha or kitty cat, or I'm drawing a blank on other words, but yeah, just call it the correct word, vulva, and look up resources that'll tell you the correct wording and tell you about the clitoris and how it's not just a little nub, but actually part of it is the external and another part of it is the internal structure that maybe not bleeds out. I'm trying to think of a correct way of describing it. Extends to the inner part of your body. So finding the correct resources and making sure that if you're in a position where you're teaching someone else, whether you're someone's caregiver or they're your sibling or whatever the case may be, make sure you're using the correct terminology so that you don't end up leading them astray.
Yeah. And it's that little circle of, if you educate someone, they might educate someone else as well. So that's a nice, I suppose, approach to it. You go back to the clitoris and I suppose the body parts. You know, I had a quote from before from a different article about squirting, it was, and you had said, you know, there's so much debate over, does the G-spot exist or not? And you were saying, well, technically no, because it's actually just part of the clitoris, so to speak. Was that, that's where you were going with that, or am I correct?
Oh, you are correct. Yeah. It's basically, I wouldn't put too much pressure on finding this magical spot when all of it really is part of the internal clitoral structure within yourself.
And that's, like, what do you think about, you know, like things like squirting, and it's on my mind because I was talking about it today, about how we see it in porn, and a lot of it is, in porn is fake because it's people, you know, inserting water into their vaginas and actually squirting it out on demand because this is what porn is. That debate over, is squirting real, or, you know, is it pee or is it real and can all women squirt, all that kind of thing. Like, we're not debating the chemical consistency of semen on most things. So why do you think we're doing that for squirting?
Part of the reason why is because the vulva is like a Rubik's cube. People have it in front of them and they don't really know what to do with it. They're fascinated by it. They want to come up theories to discover it, to challenge it, to learn about it. But part of that can be kind of harmful when we teach it, or when we look at it as this magical thing that we're not really sure what to do with it, rather than a body part that we must tackle and spread educational information about. So I'm sorry, what was your question again? I feel like I went on a slight bit of a tangent.
No, I suppose there's so much as well, but that idea of like the debate over squirting being real or not, or, you know, they're analyzing the chemical consistency of it in labs rather than just doing something more interesting and more beneficial. So, you know, is the squirting aspect, I know it's very performative and it's kind of a current trend at the moment in porn and things like that, but do you think that it's almost become like, oh, this is the goal, this is what you have to do when you're having sex now with someone?
Oh, definitely. There are a lot of people who come to me and they say, I'm not squirting and I think there's something wrong with me. What if there's just a little bit of substance coming out, but not a lot of it like I see in porn? Or what if I do squirt and it's pee? I feel really gross by that. And usually my advice for people is that they need to be, I'm not saying that they have to totally be okay with whatever they think the substance is that's coming out, but just don't get too caught up in semantics and what you think you're supposed to do, what you think it's supposed to be. If you're enjoying yourself, that is all that matters. If you're finding a sense of fulfillment and pleasure, I wouldn't get too wrapped up in what you think you should do based off what you see in porn, especially because porn is for entertainment and not necessarily for education.
And the same as Hollywood, you know, no one's actually breaking their arm on screen. It's all fake. It's all props. It's yeah. all for entertainment. But because we have literacy around Hollywood and we don't have it for porn, sometimes it can get complicated and stuff. So, yeah, we might have a look at some of the questions, and just a reminder to attendees that they can drop a question in if they want to come on air and speak. That's also fine as well. I had one there that was, do girls need to come to have a good time during sex? So is an orgasm definitely something that has to happen in order to have a good time?
Not necessarily. I think we definitely need to put more aspect on pleasure rather than orgasm, because it may not happen the way you think it should happen. And sometimes it's a little hard to translate what you want when there's another person, as opposed to if you're by yourself and you may be able to orgasm very easily within a couple minutes. And then when you have another person in front of you and you're communicating what you want, that translation may be a bit harder to enact. So I don't necessarily think that people have to orgasm or climax to have a good time. As long as it feels good to you, I think that is the majority of the battle. And then on the other side of that, I do encourage people to figure out what maybe makes them orgasm. I mean, don't put it at the forefront of every sexual experience. However, there are some times when I know, okay, I do need to come right now. I don't want to just, you know, have this experience and then maybe have it lost. I do want to finish all the way, but definitely don't make that the end all to every sexual experience.
Yeah, which makes sense, because that removes a lot of the pressure then as well. And the whole like, oh, it wasn't good sex if there wasn't an orgasm, but it might have been really good sex. It might have ticked other needs, or, you know, that need for like emotional intimacy that we have as well.
Definitely.
I have another question there. Are some of the positions and pace in porn realistic, and do we have to try and keep up with that?
Woo! That is hard to keep up with. And believe me, I've tried, but I'm just not as flexible as I used to be. Like, my arm is in one place and then my leg's all in the other place, and then I get a cramp. I would encourage trying if you're in that fun and flirty mood to where you're having sex for the hell of it and you just want to try this position just to see how it works. But I'd only take it with a grain of salt, because when it comes to porn, they purposely make it look like the best angle and the best position. And it may look beautiful when you're looking at it, but in reality, when you try it, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm about to have the biggest cramp, or my back hurts, or you're about to break my neck doing this. So yeah, it's worth trying, but just don't get your hopes up too much.
Yeah, I mean, cramps are a definite more common part of sex than what we might realize or
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And stitches, do you call them stitches over where you are? If you get that kind of pain in your side, like it was after you run. I don't know.
Oh, I just call it cramp.
Oh, yeah. No worries. And then I had another question. But it's gone now. Where did I see it? Where can you go to find information on sexual liberation that isn't porn and that is actually reflective of real life sex?
Ooh, one of my favorite resources is Taboo, TABU. And it's an online platform that advocates for mental and sexual health. And most of it is a community where we, on social media or online, we poll people and figure out their different responses to different things. And the overall message is really just having people comfortable with these conversations about sex and with who they are as a sexual human being. So I definitely encourage taboo.
Brilliant. And I like that you mentioned there that they're linked to mental and sexual health, because sex is just a regular part of your overall health. It's you know, connected to your mental and your physical health, but it's just, it should be normalized the same way we should normalize mental and physical health as well.
Yeah, for sure. Because me personally, I feel a lot better when I know I'm in a position where I'm receiving pleasure, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be sex with a partner, but even if I'm pleasuring myself, I feel a lot better knowing that I have that 15-page paper due by 11:59, whereas if I haven't masturbated, I'm just going to be grumpy, like, oh my gosh, I have this paper due tonight. I don't know how to relieve the stress. So yeah, I do enjoy that connection between mental and sexual health.
There is someone that I can't remember for life me before, but they had said we admit sex from like the self-care part. So, you know, if you're asked, oh, how can you relieve stress? And you're like, take a hot bath, go for a walk, read a book. And no one mentions masturbate. That's going to, you know, relieve mm-hmm. that tension. And we just completely ignore all that and just pretend like this has no actual health benefits at all. Which is really weird.
Definitely. Part of it is, and I don't know how this relates to your experience as well, but with me growing up in the South, that is just something that even above premarital sex, masturbation is one of those things that is just a no-no for whatever reason. People do not talk about masturbation. They don't like encouraging it. They think it's odd. And I mean, it's literally your own body. So I don't think anything's wrong with it.
Yeah, and it's such a pity because, you know, it's a free way to improve your health, and especially going into lockdown again over here anyway.
Yes.
You know, we could all do with some free stress relievers that help with that situation. Brilliant. Listen, Tati, I could talk to you for hours, but I will let you go because I know it's a weird time where you are at the moment. So I appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you if they want to follow your work or get in contact?
People can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. My handles are both Tati_K_King, TATY_K_KING.
Brilliant. And yeah, you have some really interesting content on your Instagram where it's so much sex education that's coming out. So it's brilliant and definitely
Thank
well
you.
Worth to follow. No, really, really stylish as well. I'm quite jealous of, like, you know, your ability to constantly take awesome selfies because you look amazing in them. So
thank you.
Well done you. Brilliant. Thanks again to all my listeners. I really appreciate you tuning in and supporting the podcast. If you can pop over to Apple and rate and review, it really does help get the podcast out there. You can follow on Spotify. If you want to drop me a line, it's GlowSPodcast on both Twitter and Instagram. And if you really, 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 really like the podcast, hint, you can support us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And that really does help to keep the mics on and the content going. So I look forward to chatting to you next time, and stay safe.